around you that you like. For example, you can put on glasses. I'm not saying this is the way you can do it. But if somebody says you can't have the environment around you that's entirely yours, an environment that your wife has around her that's entirely hers. But the point isn't really about creating an adaptive environment around the person. The point I'm making is that, particularly with affective feedback, it's this idea of measuring affect. It's really about understanding the implications of what the impact of technology is having on us, and being able to understand what that affect is, and then constructively trying to use that. But your point is valid. I mean, if you have 100 people in a room, how do you get it collected? And that's a challenge. But I think it is possible. If you think of things like, for example, concerts, right? I don't know how it's done, but there's an energy created around the collective, which I think technology can mediate for sure. Yeah,
I noticed that there's something quite lacking from what you were saying, and that is something called social context. You were talking about a man, middle-aged men getting more likely to get depression and things, but by teaching them to teach themselves how not to get depression does not deal with the social causes that cause depression in the first place. Now, you may think that businesses may control things for the next 1,000 years. They certainly will if they have hold of this technology and can train workers to be more compliant and more pliant and do their jobs better. And there is many dangerous things involved with this. If you give a rat a reward, it'll do more.
That's a good point. I mean, you can't, if you don't fundamentally look at the underlying conditions, you could be sustaining a problem. I totally agree with that. But I think that raises a fundamental question, though, more about how those organisations operate, not about the technology itself. I mean, what I was trying to demonstrate here is that, I mean, if somebody has very, very strong physical symptoms of, say, I don't know, depression and trauma, I mean, we should try, as a matter of responsibility, to find ways of alleviating that. But getting to the point of why they got depressed or whatever in the first place, that's a bigger issue, and I think that demands a much bigger partnership. I mean, one of my fundamental issues about where we're going in terms of, you know, lifestyle and health attire and so on is that we're doing exactly what you're suggesting. We're saying that we don't have to think about people. The only thing that's important here is wealth. And I think that takes a collective opinion. Like the first question, there is a collective opinion about changing that. You know, people need to get up and say, look, that's not the right way to go. But fair point, point taken.
I enjoyed very much the presentation. Just a couple of questions. A few months ago, I visited and placed miles away from here in one of the biggest cities, Sao Paulo in Brazil. They have a project called Telecenter, and they have more or less in shanty towns, they have projects for people with kind of not access. But the first time I visited, it was a guy playing games, and I suppose I asked as well, why they don't learn how to use the computer and like how to type, and they use kids, and they say, for them, it's a better way to start playing games, to understand them with the computer. But my question would be, is there any chance, for example, you divide it by age, like let's say you get kids, or you get teenagers, you get adults, like normally you don't mix different kind of
age groups.
Yeah, and as well, I don't know what is the possibility, for example, talking about environmental education or education for sustainability. What is the challenge to mix? I understand that these projects are very interesting, but it would be an opportunity for these kind of kids that through these kind of games or this system, they try to understand what is their own responsibility with the
Well, I mean, I think there's a spectrum of questions there. The first question is that the clubhouse was initially conceived for children. And but there's absolutely no reason why it couldn't be a community resource. Like, for example, we have a number of different groups using it now because we can't open it during school hours for obvious reasons, and that instead of addressing the problem of kids dropping out of school, you'd probably be creating the problem of knowing going to school. But so during when it's free, we have different groups coming in. So we've got single moms are coming in, they use it, for example, they do their own newsletters, their own web pages and so on. Some of the other community groups use it. I mean, there's a whole series of initiatives there. It's really a management exercise. In terms of projects that are around sustainability and particularly environment, I suspect that's what you're most interested in.
Kind of learning about sustainability.
Yeah, sure. Well, the whole thing about the way the projects are generated in the clubhouse is it's all based on what the children firstly are passionate about. So, for example, a big issue might be, not specifically related to the environment, but it might be something like money lending, for example, in the area of that. And they would do a whole series in their bullying or whatever. Right? Once they get capable of, you know, artistically representing or doing multimedia, whatever, on these projects, they can then move on to different things. You can do a whole program around themes and issues in the environment, in the area, and you can bring in concepts like the environment, you can bring in things like employment, you can bring a whole series of things in there. And that's really up to the mentors. I mean, the mentors, like the volunteers come in, are really about broadening the horizons of the children. So they could bring that dimension to the clubhouse. And the kids with their technical skills can then begin the projects like that. So it's all about building blocks and about connections between people with the knowledge and people who don't have the knowledge. So?
What about, I feel that technology, first and foremost, should be used to facilitate life. And what happened to the re-study, the connection, the reconnection between man, the humankind, and the environment? I mean, at the end of the day, technology abuses the environment, and it's controlled by multinational corporations. Who's going to fund this once it becomes, you know, who is going to fund this? It's going to be Microsoft, Intel? These corporations aren't interested in the environment, they're interested in money.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but at the end of the day, it's incredible the way these things are working. I would see a huge shift in organisations around the theme of sustainability. The biggest word that will dominate economics in the next 30 or 40 years is the issue of sustainability. And the obvious one that's bringing that to the fore is energy, because we just simply cannot sustain the energy requirements of the planet.
Are these buildings that you're creating in clubhouses, are they sustainable? Or are they abusing the environment just like every other building?
Well, you have to, in my opinion, I agree, you can take a very extreme view on how we are abusing the environment. We're certainly using the environment, and many things lead to abusing the environment. But I'm not sure, personally speaking, if we can get away from the fact that we do use tools. And the question is, it's about how we use tools. It's not about whether we can stop using tools. I mean, my argument, as I said in the talk, is that if we stand up and say, abandon the use of technology or, you know, never do that, I think a certain amount of people will do that, but the mainstream people aren't, and the people with the resources and the power that are doing all the damage, they're the ones that aren't going to buy into that. What you need to do is you need to find ways to engage their energies in a different way. And what I propose is that it's this model of people capital rather than profit capital or money capital. That's the start point, because ultimately, if you're looking after people, all the issues of sustainability. Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah, in meditation, it's been shown that prisons become fairly normal societies in research.
Prisons?
Prisons become like fairly normal societies. If the guards and inmates do meditation.
Right.
This has been proven scientifically in a lot of countries, book written about it. And it seems to me like that technique, doesn't matter whether you call it transcendental or Christian or Zen, it works much the same way. And that's available free to everybody. And that it's a technique that needs to be, as it were, used far more. Now, I'm not against using the technology to check out how effective it is or things like that, but I think that it's free and it doesn't cost anything. And that when people do it, when they start to discover themselves, as it were, they become freer from all the controlling influences that are there. There's one other kind of, it seems unrelated thing. And that is that our philosophy now is the philosophy of competition. And that competition is the root of all disputes and all war. And until such time as we go back to whether it's Buddhism again or Hinduism or Christianity, where love is the supposed philosophy of each of these, if we're not going to start moving in the direction of that we would like to go in, other words, where there's peace. And environmental, less environmental activation and so on like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the last point's very, very valid, very true. There's no doubt that we are driven by competition, but I would actually go beyond that, and it's really what I was saying at the start. It's not just competition, it's beyond that again. It's like, it is this philosophy of Superman. It's the will to dominate, control, manipulate. It's a little bit deeper than just competition, which can be quite healthy at times. And I think, as I said earlier on, I think BJ identified that. He wasn't saying that's the way we should be, but he identified it, and I think he just made conscious what we do unconsciously, which is quite a scary thing. And my feeling is that we've got to that point, to the point in evolution that we are now doing those kind of things, but now something different is needed, a different mechanism or a different means to engage the universe around us, I have a genuine label. The reason we're talking now today about things that people have known for a long time, to be honest with you, it's because I believe the momentum is growing around these issues. We're not going to, but certainly some of the ongoing activity in the world today is absolute evidence.
Another comment about Nietzsche becoming Superman. For me, the Superman is someone who's in harmony with nature itself. Because that's being the most important thing is to actually be in harmony with nature, not to harm it, and not to harm yourself in the process, but simply to be the most that you can be, which is in harmony with the way or the Tao or some type of because you have a biofeedback system, which is your own life force and your own body.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you become that perfect being that's more aligned with the source, then you suffer less.
Yeah, it's definitely a different angle. Just say the lady behind.
You spoke earlier about the loss of clearing certainty, like bringing together the loss of the market and production, etc. And I'm just wondering where they're based and where the appetites go.
We're based in Dublin. I mean, we It's like one of the things that the lab is trying to do more generally is to encourage this multidisciplinary approach. I mean, one of the things, I'm a professor here at the left, so I know very well, but one of the things that happens in universities is that ultimately was the idea of a university. I think Newman, that concept that, you know, it's a purely learning and creative environment. But I don't think we really do that in the institutions nowadays. I think departments tend to be very separate and almost divided even within the departments themselves, because there's a vying for, you know, who's publicising what, funding from the main funding body within the university and so on. It's a real shame because in the position that I'm in, I look at, say, for example, you know, just being specific here, but if you look at sort of the expertise in the psychology department in Trinity and the engineering department at UCD and, you know, the new upcoming department of management. If those skills were pooled and resourced, you'd have an extraordinary dynamic bunch of people doing extraordinary things. And it is quite frustrating to say that. So one of the things the lab is trying to do is to show how it's possible, why it's necessary, and hopefully with these demonstrations, kind of the how it should be sustainable and continued. So it's not immediately happening, but it's we're hopefully we're moving in the right direction. Well, I mean, one of the things that I've sort of are hinting towards, that's the whole idea of design philosophy. For example, design schools are moving in that direction very much now. NCAD and various colleges are shifting towards a multidisciplinary approach. And I think you'll probably find in universities in the future we'll be doing the exact same thing. At the moment, from a business perspective, it isn't. You don't see them doing that. Actually.
accessible, comfortable to people accessible. In other words, if you ask them the question of wearing the brain monitor, would you be able to pick up that answer and transfer it on the screen? Is that one of the aims of the service?
It's a hard question to answer because it's an unknown. But let me give us a very simple, broad answer. I'm also conscious that Philip Giselle is next to me, so he's going to probably refute my explanation of the sympathetic versus sympathetic system here. But your heart is controlled by two nervous systems, sympathetic and parasympathetic, and they respond very differently under different situations. So, for example, when we played Relaxed Domain with Chloe and Amy, we were looking at a parasympathetic response, a very slow, gradual response, right? Okay. If you were doing a lie detector test, you'd be looking for the opposite, which is the sympathetic response, the really fast, rapid response. So it's a very coarse discrimination between that particular biological activity. But if you could produce a stimulus that would sustain that particular response, or then provoke another one, if you get a transition between the two, you may be having some kind of communication ability with the person. But it's vague to know whether it's you are or you're not. So it's very coarse. It's not as precise as asking a question. It's more about a sense of arousal in the person based on some stimulus that they get. Does that answer your question?
You're saying that all notebooks are lectured. Then therefore the response to the specific question that you have, the answer, is repeatable.
Oh yeah, no, oh yeah, sorry, simple thing. Yeah, no, that's fair enough. You know, it's an unconscious response. So all you're checking here is there some kind of cognitive, unconscious ability responding to that? But you're not talking about a conscious response. You wouldn't be able to determine that. Because, I mean, they're going. Anybody else?
That would be like something of the implant, like, digital inclusion, whatever you call it.
This talk?
This is that inclusion, what
with the clubhouse?
Yeah. And the county council not involved in this kind of thing, like common.
They're not involved. See, the issue, what tends to happen with technology is that people think, just throw a high-speed connection to a school or, let's provide loads of computers to the Liberties area or whatever. But what's really nice about the clubhouse model is that there's a really strong people dimension. There's a whole learning model built into the actual technology. The technology in many ways is incidental. It's a space, there's great tools there, but it's actually the connection of people that's the important thing. So we've only got two of these models in Ireland at the moment, and the hope is that we can actually have more of them because they're very sustainable because there's a very strong people dimension. That's the idea. I think Dave is going to beat me here. Yes, driven by cars. Well, can I?
So, I'd like to just go a little bit further. I'm actually saying it's involved. It's a good, very successful model in the world. So, I'm sort of curious because, say, Media Labs are probably looking for corporate sponsors. So, bottom line, I think we have to have corporations to make a profit.
How can you make one?
How can you make a profit or increase it?
Well, you don't directly help these companies. You do help them think differently. That's the... Like, at the end of the day, let me give you a quick example about email. But I often give this example about email, which was never designed with this in mind. But if you think of email, it's a huge enabler for business and for organisations and various stuff like that, right? And I hate it, quite frankly, because I get far from in every day and, you know, you have to be online for ridiculous amounts of time. But I built up a great friendship with a guy who has cerebral palsy, right? And I can't have a conversation with him physically because his neck mechanism, if he wanted to say two sentences, it would take 10 minutes. Okay? However, he goes home and he writes an email. And it's a long, detailed email. He's really smart guy, doing communication of all things in DCU. Really, really smart and doing brilliant. And then I respond accordingly, and it's probably the only email that I respond with loads of clauses and sentences, normally just two liners. But there's an example of technology which was originally designed for profits, but it's actually an incredible enabler for someone that but end technologies find that extremely difficult. Now, we're working on a project, for example, beyond that again, which is, if you take the metaphor of email enabling somebody to communicate, how about a tool enabling somebody in that particular condition to compose and create music, right? So we have a lovely demonstration where we're showing how just a single utterance or any kind of determinate movement, right, or blink, whatever it might be, it can actually compose music as good as Beethoven, right? And again, technology is enabling that. The reason we're focusing on the hardest cases is because if you reverse the email problem, if someone had thought about helping this kid with terrible problems write a letter, everyone would have email. And that's how you look at technology. So, yeah, sure, you can do their products. Because if you deal with the hardest cases first, you guarantee you'll find applications for the mainstream. That's the twist.
Thank you, Gabby, for a very stimulating talk, and one that really fit the themes of Convergent this year: slowing down, relax to win, and going further towards a new renaissance. I hope that we can continue, and maybe some of you will come back for more of the festival. The programmes today, packed, 54 pages up there for sale for €2, to help support this festival, which is done by a multidisciplinary group. We have geologists, anthropologists, advertising people, so we actually work in that model of bringing together creative and dynamic people to work and putting together different projects. So it really touched on. Thanks all for coming. Thanks again, Gary.
I did drop it, yeah. Thanks very much.